This is the Noah Gillian Show, and I, of course, am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 20th of October, 2022, and on today's episode, we're going to be going over the Eagles' win over the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football from last weekend, and then we're also going to discuss some other big questions in the NFL, as well as a mailbag question to finish it up. But before we get started, please hit that subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube, watching along on YouTube. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, please hit the follow button on there. Subscribe there. Leave us a review if you feel so kind. Also, follow us on social media. You can see the show's handles right here below, right here. You can also find my personal accounts in the description as well. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. All right, so we got a little bit of a delayed reaction to the Birds and Cowboys matchup from Sunday Night Football, but with the Eagles being on bye and just some more, a little bit of research being done there, we're finally going to get to it on this episode. The Eagles ended up winning 26-16 over the Cowboys. They stormed out to a 20-0 lead before almost coughing it all up in the second half, and then they sealed their fate in the fourth quarter. So a pretty good, you know, outcome there, moving to the Eagles to 6-0. Currently the last undefeated and still the last undefeated team in the NFL. There was a number of takeaways I had from the game. You know, I thought it was a really... It was a well-played game in most of the portion. The third quarter got a little bit hairy for the Eagles, but, you know, they've kind of been doing what they've doing all year. You know, they get out to a big lead, and then when it comes down to it, you know, they can clamp down in the second half. They can turn the ball over. They can turn the other team over, and they can hold the lead. You know, they're very good in terms of time of possession. In this game, they had a 10-minute advantage in the time of possession stat, so I thought that was really, really crucial, especially in the fourth quarter. I mean, but fourth quarter time of possession, they're holding the ball for almost 10 minutes out of all the fourth quarters they played so far. So you talk about that stat, you're only giving teams 4 minutes in the fourth quarter to be able to come back on you. It's pretty, you know, that's a pretty good stat in terms of winning football. Like, you're getting a big lead early, and people are like, well, what happens if they run a 2-minute drive? You know, what happens if they have to come back in a game? Which are all fair points. I can't wait to see what happens when Jalen Hurts has to lead a 2-minute drill down the field. I mean, he pretty much did that in Arizona. They had to settle for a field goal, unfortunately, instead of finishing that drive off with a touchdown in the fourth quarter. However, that stat is crucial because they're able to, once they get into the fourth quarter, they're able to lean on their running game. They're able to lean on the offensive line, which is one of the best in the whole NFL. So I think when you look at that stat, it's really, really telling about what's going to kind of happen down the stretch. So talking about some of my main takeaways from the game, coming into this year, if you guys listened to the Cowboys-Eagles audit I did in the offseason, definitely go back and check that out if you kind of want some perspective of where we were at coming into the year before, obviously, the Eagles started 6-0. The Cowboys lost Dak Prescott and then proceeded to win 4 in a row. I think it was pretty good breakdown, which we had, so definitely go check that out. But I pegged these two teams, spoiler alert, as pretty even. Honestly, there's about 10 positional groups overall, and I pretty much had them pegged 5-5. And obviously, a lot has changed. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is playing phenomenal. Dak Prescott got hurt. You know, a number of things have changed in terms of people's play, whether improvements or, you know, not playing up to par. But the way it looked, it pretty much game scripted the exact same way I had it kind of broken down. You know, it was a very even game in terms of the final score. Like, it definitely seemed like it was a lot closer than the final score may have indicated, even though it was only a 10-point game and the Eagles were up 20 points at one point. Like, the first quarter, scoreless. Second quarter, obviously, the Eagles have done most of their damage this year. They scored 20 straight points in the quarter. The Cowboys, I believe, ended up getting a field goal at the end, so it was 20-3 going into half. And then they came out and, you know, they looked good. They scored 14 points in the fourth, or excuse me, they scored most of their points in the, was it 26? It might have been 26-17. Sorry, 26-17 was the final score. So they scored two touchdowns in the third quarter. And then it's like, well, you know, it's getting a little bit hairy. And then obviously, like I mentioned, the Eagles look good in the fourth quarter. So that was really, really interesting. I thought they were really, really close. I've kind of had some growing concerns with the Eagles. Obviously, they're 6-0, and this will kind of lead into some, we'll kind of mix our bye week, you know, updates. You know, I'm kind of going to, as we're going into the bye week this week, obviously not a game to break down and all that stuff. So we'll kind of have a little bit of just general talk. You know, I've been a little bit nervous. There's been some things that I wish, you know, the birds would clean up. Obviously, putting together full four quarters has been something that they haven't really done yet this year. The defense at times, and maybe this is a Jonathan Gannon thing, definitely susceptible to, you know, the middle of the field. Chris Collinsworth on the Sunday night broadcast was mentioning a number of times. You look at the team, the middle of the field is where you beat them. And I think, if we run up on a team with a really good slot receiver or a really elite tight end, I think that's where we may see some issues in terms of limiting opponents' points. I mean, we haven't, you know, allowed a team over 20 points in a few weeks. So that's, you know, a positive in terms of there. But, you know, I thought it was really, really interesting to see kind of how they stacked up with the Cowboys, because now they're 4-2 after this week, still right in it in terms of the wild card picture. And that just goes down to the stats. I mean, I mentioned they were pretty even a lot of the stats. I mean, total yards, they had about 60 more total yards. The rushing yards was pretty much right there. Cooper Kupp obviously had to throw a lot more than Jalen Hurts with the big lead, so he had a little bit more throwing yards than Jalen Hurts. But total yards were pretty safe. First downs, I believe the difference was only one between that. Third down efficiency, the difference was only like one there too. Total plays, the difference was 67-65 favoring the Eagles. So that was right there as well. And the main difference really was the takeaways of the Eagles defense and the Cowboys penalties. So I thought it was one team, and you could attribute this to coaching, but I thought it was one team kind of being more buttoned up and more sure of themselves. Obviously, Cooper rushed through three interceptions. So as your backup quarterback, you're not expecting, you know, a ton out of him, but like he hadn't thrown an interception since he's taken over for Prescott. So, you know, a lot of people were really in on him being, you know, that guy to protect the ball and all that stuff. The Eagles proved to, you know, be opportunistic. You know, this is what the Eagles have been doing all year, though. They have a plus 12 turnover differential and no other team is higher than a plus 4. So that is an unreal stat, first of all, just in a vacuum. I mean, the Eagles have 14 takeaways and they've only turned the ball over 2 times. So, like, I mean, the Bills are right up there. They have like 13 takeaways, or they might even have 14 as well after this last game. But, like, they've turned it over a number of times, whereas the Eagles haven't fumbled the ball a single time, knock on wood. And Hurts has thrown 2 picks, and only one of the picks really has been a bad pick. The one against Minnesota, the little screen, was just a poor play design, and it was a poor decision by Hurts. I mean, he threw it pretty much into a crowd. He could have caught the ball. I believe it was Kenny Gainwell, but throwing a ball into a crowd in the NFL is never good. The one against the Jaguars was just a poor throw in the rain too. So overall, I'm not trying to make excuses in terms of the interceptions, but I'm talking about 2 plays all season that have been interceptions. There was one against the Cardinals that was dropped. So even then, you're still talking about, I mean, they have an 8 differential in terms of first and second place in turnover differential. They're plus 12. The next highest team is plus 4. So like, even if a couple plays go wrong either way, you're still number one in the league in turnover differential, which it's just the most important thing in the world. Protecting the ball and taking it away from your opponent is the most important thing in terms of the NFL, right next to protecting your quarterback and getting after the opposing quarterback. I think those two, sack differential and pressure differential and turnover differential, I think are the two biggest stats in terms of total team play that you can really attribute to really, really good football teams. So the Eagles had 4 sacks. And this is exactly what I'm mentioning. The Eagles had 4 sacks in that game. Cowboys defense, 0. The Eagles had 3 interceptions, 3 turnovers in this game. They turned the Cowboys over 3 times. Cowboys didn't turn the Eagles over 1 time. So I just mentioned how, you know, getting after the quarterback, turning the ball over is like the most important thing. The Eagles got after Cooper Rush and they turned the ball over. They turned the Cowboys over. So I think it was really, really important. And also the penalties, this has been one thing that the Cowboys have been struggling with for a couple years now under Mike McCarthy. Just penalties, procedural issues. Late in the game, the Eagles were going for it on, or not late in the game, the second quarter, I think it was the first play of the second quarter, the Eagles are down in the red zone, in the 10 zone, right, ready to go in. It's 4th down and like 4, and they're, you know, they might run a play, but it's not really sure, but they get up on the line and the Cowboys jump offside. Eagles, fresh set of downs, Miles Sanders punches in for a touchdown. So, like, those little things add up over the course of the season. Cowboys, 10 penalties for 72 yards. A couple unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, like Micah Parsons taunting after getting hit. Trayvon Diggs ripping his helmet off and slamming it on the ground on the field after a touchdown. Like, those types of plays are, they're your two best defensive players, so, like, it's kind of tough to, you know, like, when they've been giving you so much. But at the same time, your coach needs to hold those players the most accountable. One of my favorite things ever is Tim Duncan, to switch up the NBA a little bit. Like, Greg Popovich would yell at Tim Duncan so much. Like, would get on him more than any other player. And it just sets the tone. Like, every other player that comes into San Antonio, it's like, well, if he can yell at Tim Duncan like that, why do I think I'm mightier than that? Or why should I not be able to take it? So, like, I just think that there needs to be a little bit more accountability there in terms of their star players. I mean, that's 30 yards of penalties right there. I mean, they chose to enforce the Diggs unsportsmanlike on the 2-point conversion, and they ended up not getting it. So didn't end up hurting them, but, you know, you just can't have those little mistakes because they're going to add up. They had 10 penalties for 72 yards. The Eagles only had 2 penalties for 10 yards. So you're talking about a 60-yard differential in terms of penalty yardage, 4 sacks for the Eagles as opposed to 0, and then 3 interceptions for the Eagles defense. So that's really what the game came down to. It was a lot closer than I think a lot of people anticipated maybe coming into the week. I think a lot of people were trying to talk themselves into the Cowboys, and they showed a lot to me at least too, because I, especially when Cooper Rush came in, I thought they were just going to fall off a cliff. Obviously, Michael Gallup's been coming back from an injury. You know, they've been struggling a little bit, but then, and they haven't really been winning like shootouts, or like they haven't really been they've been winning their way with good defense and running game. But what happens when you can't run the ball, or what happens when you go down early and you can't run the ball to get back into it? So I think that's really, they showed me a lot. Honestly, I think they're still in contention. I'm really interested to see how Dak Prescott looks coming back, because that's one thing that, you know, a hand injury on your throwing hand, you know, he got a plate put back in his finger, but that's going to stay in there. He said he's going to keep a plate in there. So it's going to be interesting to see if it does get hit again, does that jar the plate loose? Does it have like a increased risk of injury if he gets hit again? Maybe. And that's where it gets a little hairy for the Cowboys in terms of that. But then they do know they have a good backup in Cooper Rush. You know, I mentioned about the time of possession with the Eagles. They had 34 minutes time of possession as opposed to the Cowboys, 25 minutes. So that was a great number as well, especially when you take a lead like that. You really need to keep the ball, drain the ball. The offensive line has been phenomenal, even with all the injuries. I was watching the New Heights podcast. Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce have a new podcast, but he was mentioning, Jason Kelce was, how all 5 starting offensive linemen for the Eagles have missed time this year, whether it just be for portions of a game or whatever. You know, Dickerson obviously had the shoulder injury where he missed the full game. Dickerson has been, or Malalata, excuse me, has the shoulder issue where he missed a game and he came back against the Cowboys. Dickerson's had some leg issues where he's been in and out of the lineup in multiple games. Kelce obviously sprained his ankle, missed a little bit of time in the Arizona game. Sam Alu has missed a little bit of time with an ankle injury, and then Lane Johnson had to leave the last game with a concussion. So the bye week, I think, is coming at a phenomenal time for the Eagles. I think that'll get it. So with the concussions, with Lane Johnson kind of talking specifically, 2 points there. One, you could definitely tell the level of play drop off. I mean, Johnson's one of the best right tackles in the league, if not the best right tackle in the league. So when you lose a guy like that, especially against going up against Micah Parsons, it's like you're really going to see the drop-off. So when he leaves the game with a concussion, you really saw that drop-off. But number 2 point on that is it was a concussion. And we're starting to see now in the wake of the Tua Tagovailoa incident, players are just missing a week. Like, a lot of times you get a concussion on Sunday. They practice throughout the week. They get upgraded to a full participant on Friday. And they're back in the lineup on Sunday. And now what we're seeing is, even though a lot of players are practicing in full later in the week, teams are still looking very, very cautious because they don't want to be that team, right? They don't want to be that team that puts a guy out there again and he gets another concussion when he just had one last week. So I think it's smart in terms of team personnel. I also think they're covering their own behinds. So I think like the reasoning and the motive behind it is a little personal for them. Like, they don't really want to worry about, like, I don't think they're really worried about the player as much, But I think it's smart just to hold the players out an extra week. So in terms of Lane Johnson, he's going to have that bye week now. It was a Sunday night game, so he'll have a full week to really just unplug, just settle in, rest. And then he has another week of potential like limited practice Wednesday, limited practice Thursday, hopefully a full participant Friday, and then should be ready to go when they come out of the bye. So I think that's crucial. The ankle injuries for, say, Milo and Kelsey, rest is just going to do so much good for them. Obviously, Dickerson's had a number of different leg injuries. Time will rest that up. And then Malalata now just having, you know, like an extra week just to kind of rest his shoulder, I think will be really, really crucial as well. So overall, Birds was a great game and was a great showing, especially on national TV. That whole weekend was phenomenal as a Philadelphia fan with the Phillies, the Flyers, the Sixers starting up. Obviously, the Eagles are 6-0 now. Sunday Night Football, big win over the Cowboys. They're just talking. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like, let's see you on Christmas Eve. All these Cowboys are saying, let's see you on Christmas Eve. Okay, let's wait till Christmas Eve and then take another L. So it's really going to be it's gonna be fun to see how it kind of looks out the rest of the season. I did see a tweet that came out. It was pretty. It was a pretty interesting tweet. It was when's the Eagles' next loss? Because they're favored in every single game. There's an interesting stretch the Eagles have. I believe they host the Giants, then they go to, they go to Indianapolis, and then they host Green Bay, and then they host the New York Giants. That's going to be an interesting pocket of games. Playing in Indy is not easy. They already beat the Chiefs at home. They're starting to play a little bit better. My Jacksonville Jaguars, AFC South future is a little bit worried right now, but Indy's a tough place to play. Obviously, Green Bay with their issues, they might go out and make a trade for a wide receiver. So if they do that, they start to improve their offense, their defense starts to get healthy. That's just always a tough game. It's the Packers. There's going to be a lot of hype around that game. And then the Giants are playing great. We're going to talk about them in a few minutes, but like a division game against the Giants. I know the Eagles have had the Giants number recently, but that's under old coaching staffs. Brian Daboll seems to be looking really, really good. Well, like I said, we'll get to that in a few minutes, but it's going to be really interesting to see. I think the bye week's coming at a good time. But then as we get to like 5, 6, 7 weeks in a row late in the season, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens. I think the Eagles are going to finish with a couple losses. I could see them losing 2 or 3 games. Maybe they shouldn't. But then even then, you're talking about 13-3. Was it 13 or what do we play 18 weeks now or 17 weeks? We play 18 weeks. I don't even know what this. So 13-4, whatever, 14-3. What a, that sounds great to me. If you told me that before the season, I'll sign me up. I would have taken 12-4, 12-5, whatever the case may be. So I think it's really, really important for them to kind of keep the momentum up. The bye week's huge. And then we'll kind of see what happens. But overall, it's a great time to be a Philadelphia Eagle fan, and we'll see what happens. But overall, bye week coming in at just the right time. All right, time to switch over to some burning questions in the NFL as we exit week 6 and go into week 7. So there's a couple things here I did want to touch on. Starting off with the first question we have here, is scoring down in the NFL? Because that's what it seems like to the casual fan just watching. It seems like there's a lot more unders. There's a lot less points being scored, especially people who are playing fantasy. Seems like a lot less scoring in that as well. And the answer to that is yes. Overall scoring in the NFL is down about a full touchdown year over year this year. So that's a pretty sizable drop. And a lot of people are wondering why, like, you know, all these rule changes are being kind of shifted to offense. So why are we seeing less points, less offense, you know, all this stuff? I think that there's a few reasons. And one of the main reasons, at least for me, and I've been listening to a lot of smarter people than me talk about this. So I think it's a really important reason is the offensive line play. We have less preseason games. We have less full padded practices in the preseason. I think that's a real reason. Like, that is a real reason why teams are struggling offensively. Their quarterback just doesn't have time. And going hand in hand with that, blitzing is up across the league. So when you combine, teams are being a lot more aggressive, sending people into the backfield, and then offensive line play is a lot worse, so to speak. You get this, you get less points, you get less time for quarterbacks to throw, you get more sacks, you get more time coming off the clock as the sacks go, as you get more sacks instead of incomplete passes. So it's really, really interesting to kind of see that, because offensive line is the only position on the field where, and you could say the same thing about defensive line, but I feel like that could be a lot more individualized because you're just going one-on-one. Offensive line is so much of a team thing. Like wide receiver, yeah, you have to be in touch with the quarterback and the rest of the players on the field, but it's really just like one-on-one. You're with the cornerback one-on-one. Running back, it's, you can kind of include that with the offensive line in terms of pass protection, but like you got five guys who all need to be on the same exact page of where we're covering up, which way we're sliding, which way the check, which way, if did you pick up the check from the quarterback? We're going to switch the play. Now you need to pull instead of pushing off to the side. Like all these different changes, and teams that it all takes is one injury. Then you have a new guy in who just, this is the first time these five players are playing together, then the communication gets off. One, you might be able to look at someone and just give a signal or say two words to someone and they all understand the check, whereas now you have a different player in there and you say two things and they're like, I don't know what that means. And it's nothing against these players, but they just don't have the time to get it, you know, hammered home. And this is where I'm so thankful as an Eagles fan to have a coach like Jeff Stoutland, who is just an absolute wizard with offensive line play. We've had all kinds of injuries, like I mentioned. All five of our starting guys have missed time in games, and it hasn't really, outside of Driscoll replacing Johnson, because Johnson down to any replacement level player is a major drop off. But outside of that, you haven't really seen a drop in play from the Birds. But outside of that, most teams like the Rams, you're seeing the Rams who won the Super Bowl last year, they lose Andrew Whitworth, probably a Hall of Fame left tackle. And now they're down to, and now they're having injuries as well on top of that. And they can't even throw the ball, you know, so they're really struggling on their offensive end as well. So I think the offensive line play is a major, major reason why that. Also, another reason in terms of just defensive philosophy, a lot more teams are just playing two-man high safety. Like, that is such a hard defense to throw deep against. You see this with the Bengals, why they're not being more explosive. Teams are just taking it away. They're putting two safeties back. They're sticking two corners on the wide receivers, and they're saying, dink and dunk your way down the field. Like, we're going to give you the 7-yard in. We're going to give you the 10-yard over route. Like, we're not going to give you the 25-yard deep ball down the sideline. We're not going to give you that, because you got guys like Ja'Marr Chase. You got guys like Tyreek Hill. You got guys like all these players, all these burners that can just run past you down the field. Yeah, they're going to get doubled from now on. That's pretty much how the Bengals have, you know, done so well. And this is, you know, one of the things that Jonathan Gannon runs. They kind of run that too high safety. We'll give up the middle of the field, but we're not going to allow explosive plays. And sometimes you can get beat by that, like especially with the Vikings when they played the Eagles in week 2 this year. They played shell coverage pretty much, two-man high, two corners. But the corners pretty much played a lot of zone. They didn't really play man or mix anything up. And the Eagles shredded it up. But they're mixing in a lot of different coverages. They're blitzing a lot more. They're playing more two deep safety. Like, I think that the defenses are getting faster. So that is just overall league-wide trends that I think are causing those things. A lot of teams were playing that against the Chiefs as well to take those. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes loves to push the ball down the field. He had Tyreek Hill. Now they don't have Tyreek Hill, but they still have some deep threats in Valdez-Scantling and the like, Sky Moore, Mecole Hardman. They still have some deep threats there. But when you're playing that type of coverage, it makes just the deep ball so incredibly hard to go down the field with. So I think offensive line play as well as just defensive philosophy shifting is accounting for the scoring being down. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that's going to put more emphasis on offensive line play. It's going to put a greater premium on the teams that do have good offensive line play. It's going to put greater premium on teams that can run the football and they don't have to throw it every single down. Obviously, you have some teams like the Bills with Josh Allen who are going to throw 65% of the time. They have Josh Allen. Nobody else in the league has Josh Allen. So that's when he runs for 60 yards too. So I think league-wide, it's an interesting trend just to kind of keep track of. I do think offenses will adjust as time goes on. But overall, I think it's really, really interesting because of all the rule changes for the offense. And I think those three reasons are big factors why scoring is actually down. All right, let's talk about the New York teams now. We have the New York Giants sitting at 5-1 and the New York Jets sitting at 4-2. So the Giants sitting at 5-1, second in the NFC East with wins over the Ravens and the Packers. So two big wins for the Giants. Their only loss came against the Cowboys this year on Monday night. and that was a close game as well. But the real storyline here for the Giants is Brian Daboll. Probably the front runner for coach of the year, him and Nick Sirianni, mainly because Sirianni's 6-0. You know, the number one team in the league always has a coach of the year candidate. So I think those two are probably the main front runners, but I'd probably give it to Daboll just because of the turnaround they have. And they're still 5-1. It's not like they're 3-3 and they have a good turnaround. It's like they're 5-1. He's truly changed the culture in terms of how the players play. You know, I watched a lot of clips, a lot of people breaking down things, and it's just like the body language and the extra efforts from the Giants players are extremely high. Like, they really want to go out there and they want to play for this guy. They want to play for the G-men, and they want to play for each other, for their teammates. And I think that is so crucial. Their defense is playing phenomenal. And the thing that's, it's such a key factor is Brian Daboll is making great adjustments in the second half. They're one of the best second half teams in the league. You know, maybe in the first half they don't look as good, but talking about a game against the Packers, they're down 17-3, they come back and win. Game against the Ravens, they come back and win, even though they're down multiple scores. And I think that's really, really impressive, especially as a first-year coach, getting the buy-in from your players, especially with a quarterback in Daniel Jones who, you know, isn't the best, let's just say, probably like a bottom third quarterback in the league. And Daboll's getting the best out of him. He's not treating him like Josh Allen. He said, okay, you know what? We have Saquon Barkley, a good offensive line, and a limited quarterback. We're going to run the ball 25, 30 times. Sorry, but that's their recipe to win. And it's kudos to him because a lot of play callers will try to fit an offense into their system. And I think this is what Nick Sirianni did last year with Jalen Hurts. This is what John Harbaugh and Greg Roman did with Lamar Jackson when they got him. And that's what Brian Daboll's starting to do with Daniel Jones. Let's do what you do well more. And it seems simple. It really seems like a simple idea. Let's do what we do well more. But a lot of teams don't do that. A lot of teams have such an ego. A lot of coaches have such an ego. They're going to be like, my system is what works. You need to run this system to be successful. And I think Daboll is just doing an outstanding job. All their wide receivers are getting hurt. Kenny Galladay, worst contract in arguably in NFL history. He's not even playing. Kadarius Toney seems to have a new soft tissue injury everywhere on his body every other week. They finally got Wandale Robinson back. I believe their first round wide receiver, either first or second round, but high capital draft pick on Wandale Robinson from Kentucky. He's starting to get back into the fold now, but he's been out for a while. Their leading receivers is like Richie James, and I don't even know who else. So it's like, they got a rookie tight end and Bellinger, who, like, rookie tight ends never pan out, but he looks good. So I think it's really, really impressive to what they're doing. It's really a testament to Brian Daboll, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think they've won some games against some subpar teams. They've gotten lucky along the way, but hey, the Eagles have gotten lucky along the way. The Bills have, you know, gotten lucky along the way with some of their things. The Chiefs, you know, every team gets lucky, especially to a good record. So I think they're 5-1. They earned it. They deserve it. And it's going to be interesting to see how they look the rest of the year. On the other side of the city, the New York Jets, not the other side of the city, the other side of MetLife Stadium, the Jets 4-2 right now. I believe they're either second. Yeah, I think they're second in the AFC East. Right behind the Bills, right in front of the Dolphins, with wins over the Dolphins. Big win this last week. 2 weeks ago against the Dolphins. And they just went into Lambeau and defeated the Packers. Pretty much, it was close, but they pretty much blew them out. I mean, they won by, I think, 17 points. It was 27-10 or 27-14, something like that. But it wasn't particularly close. And it's been really, really, it's a similar strategy, kind of. They understand what their quarterback is. They're not going to allow, I mean, he came back against Pittsburgh, I believe was his first game back, and he threw two interceptions, and they're like, let's dial it back a little bit. Let's lean into Breece Hall, second round stud running back. Breece Hall, if you guys listened into the pod where I had Jalen Howard on here, you'll know I'm a big Breece Hall fan, but I probably gave up on him a little too early. They're finally utilizing him big time. They're not really throwing the ball a ton, so that's kind of where their receivers are getting a little bit frustrated, but they still have Elijah Moore, stud wide receiver, Garrett Wilson, stud wide receiver, Corey Davis, former top five pick at the wide receiver position, Tyler Conklin, a tight end. They have weapons on the outside, but their offensive line is playing phenomenal. Their running game is really, really good, and Robert Saleh has that defense playing great, and that's one thing, you know, listening to some of these shows, like, if you specialize on one side of the ball and you're a head coach now, you better get that side of the ball right. Like, some teams will come in and you have an offensive-minded head coach and you can't score. or some teams, you bring in a defensive-minded head coach, and you can't stop the run, or you can't stop the pass. So it's like, now the Jets are finally starting to play good defense. Quentin Williams, that defensive tackle, one of the best defensive tackles in the league, is absolutely playing out of his mind. Just a stud, can get in the backfield, can rush the passer, can eat up the run, can do everything. And then Sauce Gardner on the outside already looks like one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Just absolutely shuts down who he plays. I know anytime the Jets come up for one of my receivers on any of my fantasy teams, I'm looking away from them. Like, he just absolutely shuts down opposing wide receivers. It just is that simple. And when you take a cornerback that high, you're hoping for that. Obviously, Detroit found out in Jeff Okuda, you know, it doesn't always return that quickly. But the Jets they got lucky, man. Sauce Gardner is absolutely phenomenal. He might be even in the running for an all-pro selection as a rookie. There is a lot of good cornerback play in the league right now, but he's in the conversation. There's no doubt about it. So they have great defensive line play. They have great secondary. And they're a similar formula. Really good defense, good running game. Don't let the quarterback lose the game for us. And that's what they're doing. I'm interested to see what happens once they start playing a little bit better teams, because I think we can all kind of agree the Packers are struggling, to say the least. So that was a big win, though. I don't want to take anything away from the Jets on that one, because going into Lambeau is tough, and especially they'll play up when they're at home. So, you know, are the New York teams for real? I think so. I mean, the records say so, and in this league, you are what your record says you are. I think Bill Parcells said that, you know, you can say this, you can say that, we should be this, we should be that, but at the end of the day, what's your record? That's what the NFL is. It's what the NFL always has been, and right now, they're two of the best teams in their respective divisions and in their respective conferences. All right, last burning question we're going to talk about from week 6 is, are the Vikings real contenders to win the NFC? Currently sitting at 5-1, first in the NFC North. I think they're kind of flying under the radar because of that massacre they suffered on Monday Night Football in week 2 to the Eagles. A lot of times when you have a primetime game like that early in the season, teams kind of, or fans kind of just assume that's who you are when you have that league. But now they're 4-1. They're 5-1, excuse me. They're first in the NFC North. They beat the Packers. No other team in that division really looks like they're ready to compete. The Packers, I'm sure, will be ready to go once they play again later in the year. But, you know, they're looking great. Now, are they true contenders? No. Honestly, flat out, no. Here's why. After the loss to Philly, they have 4 straight wins. Phenomenal. It's hard to win 4 straight games in the league. But let's talk about it. Home wins against Detroit, 1-4. New Orleans, I believe, are 2-4, and Chicago, who are 2-4. So, I don't know. All 3 of those home wins, by the way. And then they go on the road, and they beat the Dolphins this week. Phenomenal win for them. Dolphins are a really, really good story this year. Obviously, Tua has been in and out of the lineup, so they've been struggling. But, like, they started the game against their third-string quarterback, Skylar Thompson, I believe his name is. And then he goes down in the game. And then Teddy Bridgewater has to come in, who was the backup, but then got a concussion. So now he was just he's cleared to play, but he's going to be the backup. Skylar Thompson goes in, he gets hurt. Now Teddy B comes back in. So, like, I'm not sold really on them. Like, even against Detroit, they had to come back. Against Chicago, they had to come back. Like, I just not really am sold on them as true contenders. The true test is going to be in 2 weeks at Buffalo. I think they have 2 more kind of green rated matchups, so to speak, bottom half of the league teams. So they should probably win both of those games. But then you got at Buffalo, home against Dallas, home against New England. Granted, those are both home games, but I think those are going to be very, very interesting. And that's going to be the telling stretch of the season for them. Right in the middle of the year, they're going to have at Buffalo. I anticipate them losing that game, so I don't want to, like, put too much stock in that game. But then home against Dallas, home against New England, those are games you should clean up, especially at home. So are they true contenders? I don't really think so, but they are 5-1 and they are first in their division. All right, guys, just to wrap up the show today, we are going to be answering a mailbag question. We actually got, what does the future look like for Bailey Zappe in the NFL? For those of you that are unfamiliar with Bailey Zappe, he was, I believe, fifth or sixth round quarterback drafted this year by the New England Patriots, rookie, and was third string on the depth chart for the Patriots coming into the year. Wasn't even dressing to start the year, but Mac Jones goes down with a pretty brutal high ankle sprain. And then in week 4, I believe it was, against the Packers, he's the backup quarterback, and Brian Hoyer goes down with a concussion, and he has to come in, almost leads them to a win over the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau. They end up losing 27-24, but then starts the next 2 games, and he's 2-0, 2-0 in both those starts. He went in the first game, he went 17 for 21 for 188 yards, a touchdown and a pick in a 29-0 win at home versus Detroit. So Detroit's only 1-4. It was, you know, they were without a lot of their key guys. So, you know, he didn't lose them the game. He got the ball where he needed to be on time, on target. So he looked great. Next game, 24 of 34 for 309 yards and 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, a 118 quarterback rating in a 38-15 win on the road in Cleveland. Granted, Cleveland's kind of been up and down this year. I believe they're 2-4 now, but they have pieces. They have a great offensive line, a great defense, and a great running game. And a number one weapon on the outside, Amari Cooper. Obviously, Jacoby Brissett's not the best quarterback. I digress. But what does the future look like for Bailey Zappe? Should he start over Mac Jones? It's looking like Mac Jones is practicing this week and he should be cleared to go. Do they go back to him? What has Mac Jones done in the NFL to really prove himself? I mean, last year, they only let him throw him 3 times in Buffalo. Granted, the weather was bad, but they only let him throw it 3 times in an NFL game. He really didn't do much. Come the playoffs, I believe they made the playoffs. I mean, or they won 10 games. Like, he just wasn't really that guy. And then this year, hasn't really looked great. He is another player who looks better with the supporting cast is higher above him. Like, if he had a great offensive line, a great running game, a number one receiver out by, and a great defense, he can lead your team to 10, 11 wins. He did that with Alabama. I mean, he had great players all around him, and he almost won the Heisman. And now you see in the NFL, it's a much different world. You have a third string left tackle. You have an overpaid wide receiver out there who's disgruntled, who's in the media talking. You have 2 great running backs, but you have, you know, struggles on, like, offensive line. So I just think it's really important that, like, Bailey Zappe has played well. And I think it's going to be a tough decision. I think Mac Jones, because of the draft capital, because of the money, because of the finances, he is going to get the next crack at the starting QB job. But I think if he starts to struggle, there needs to be some serious consideration to go back to Bailey Zappe, because he has looked the part. Wasn't really supposed to be much, but he, like I said, he gets the ball on time, on target, to the right guy, the way the play's designed. He gets it exactly where it's supposed to go, and he's not losing the game. I mean, he had an interception in his first start, but granted, it was also his first start of his career, and I'll pass one interception. And then the next game on the road in Cleveland, no turnovers, 118 quarterback rating, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. I believe he's completing over 65% of his passes, so, like, he's looking really good, a lot better than I thought. I got this question, actually, I believe, a week or two ago, and I've been just sitting on it because I think it was a little too early to, I mean, he was just coming in relief, then he got one start, and it was a 29-0 home victory, so I wanted to give him another game, and he's impressing. What can I say? I think, you know, coming in as a backup, coming into the game against Lambeau, I know they didn't allow him to do much, but he made some throws, got them a chance to win the game. So, you know, I'm not hating on the kid. He looks good. He's getting the ball on time, on target. We're going to see what happens with Mac Jones comes back healthy. But overall, I think he's earned himself another shot if Mac Jones does start to struggle. All right, everyone, that is going to do it for the show today. Once again, check the description for all our social media handles. All the show's account information is right here in the bubble for those watching on YouTube. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, make sure to go give us a follow, give us a subscription there. It'd really mean a lot. Again, if you have any other questions for the show, definitely shoot us either a text if you have my number, or if you want to follow us on social media, hit us with a Instagram message there. The comments below, any place, any question, we'll get it in the mailbag for the next show or whenever it comes in. But for myself, thank you guys so much for joining in, and we can't wait to see you back here again next time.